So I'm TG, I'm going to talk about decentralized internet protocols for peer-to-peer collaboration. And I'd like to approach this from the notion of digital sovereignty and how it relates to all this. So digital sovereignty is about collective or personal autonomy and control over our technologies, infrastructure, data, algorithms, identities, and in the open source hardware and software world, we take care control over the actual technologies for the hardware and software itself, but we need to keep in mind that in order to keep studying and modifying these systems, we need to keep the complexity bounded, because otherwise, if it gets over complex, then we no longer understand or no longer can modify these systems easily. And these days, when we build layers upon layers, it's often hard to understand the whole technology stack and all the security implications and privacy implications of that. So, and in terms of infrastructure, there are different efforts to build autonomous servers and networks and collective hosting providers and so on. But this is not enough for personal data sovereignty, personal control over our own data. In order to do that, we need to give access to the data itself, to the users directly, because if we have offline access to all our data, then we also have sovereignty over the algorithms that process this data, and also we get a more resilient infrastructure where we do not depend anymore on a global interconnected network, but networks and systems keep working even in isolated autonomous environments. So we can have replication with opportunistic synchronization that allows collaboration. And the last thing is identities. If you also have autonomous self-sovereign identities, we do not depend on providers that issue our identities, but we can keep hosting our data in different points, but still keep the same identity and still keep control over where we host our data, and we still have access to all the data we work with. So in terms of bounding complexity, one interesting effort in this space is unikernels, which are specialized single address space machine images constructed by library operating systems. And one example is Mirage OS, which is a library operating system written in OCaml. This means that the whole stack is getting simplified. We no longer depend on an operating system kernel running user processes and so on the whole stack, but we can run a minimized stack unikernels directly running on a hypervisor and cutting all the complexities of operating systems like Unix or whatever you use. So this leads to reduced complexity and reduced attack surface, and also the resource footprint is much smaller. These systems need less memory and processor usage, which means that we can reach, in hosted environments, we can reach a much higher density hosting, and in user devices, we also need less processing power to run these applications. And Yeah, so the way these library operating systems work is that there's a minimal runtime, and then in the case of MirageOS, we only have OCaml libraries, which are composable, such that we can build a unikernel that, say, I want an HTTP server, then I link in the networking and the HTTP library and block device, block storage, so I can store the files. And if you want to build an application that doesn't need networking or block storage, then you just skip that part. So so composability is also an important way of reducing complexity and bound and building reusable systems that are not a huge monolith that you can, that you either take the whole thing or nothing, but we have small reusable libraries that other projects can reuse. For instance, if you're building network protocols, it's a good practice to build a separate library that just deals with the protocol logic, implements all that, and in a separate library, you add all the network I/O serialization and all that that might be specific to the way you use your application. So another project I'd like to point out is Ermin, which is a distributed database based on the principles of Git, which is implemented as an OCaml library, so we can also run this database as a unikernel. So it's based on the concept of mergeable persistent data structures. In a way that similar, the concept is very similar to Git, that we get history, branches, trees, but instead of source code and text files, we store data structures inside a store. And as an application developer, you would define the data types and the merge algorithms that can merge these data types. And if we design these merge functions in a way that that all the merges are conflict-free, then we get the CRDTs, conflict-free replicated data types, which are interesting and the required component to build these systems that work on collaborative data structure that allows conflict-free merges so that different people can work on the data in a decentralized way, similar to the Git workflow with software. You do your modifications offline and at some point push it to the other participants and merge the changes. So in particular, Ermin supports different backends, memory-based, chunk, which is you split the data into small chunks, store them on the disk in identical sizes. And later this can be extended with encryption so that if you host your repositories, your data somewhere else on the internet, then the hoster would not be able to decrypt and have access to this data. And Ermin also supports a Git file system backend where you can access the data with the Git tools and operate on them. So in terms of network architectures, there are various approaches prevalent these days. One is the most used is the federated servers architecture, where you have a bunch of servers somewhere on the internet. Each user have their own server, a hosting provider, store their data there, and then if it's a centralized system, that's it. If it's a federated system, then the servers talk to each other, and you can talk to people on other servers as well. But the problem with this approach is that oftentimes these federated protocols just use a full mesh between the servers, which has issues with scalability. Eventually, you get too much message complexity if you increase the number of servers in these architectures, and it doesn't scale to large numbers. And another issue is moving identities. If you want to switch hosting providers, There are two issues. One is how to take your data to the other provider, and the other issue is how to take your identity to the other provider. So, and often there are no tools to easily migrate your data, and you have to change your identities. So for the identities, if you use sovereign identities based on public keys, then we no longer depend on username at host domain addressing. And in terms of scalability, if we like, if you take a look at peer-to-peer networks, they often their aim is to design scalable, globally scalable protocols for communication. And but the issue with peer-to-peer networks is like there are two generic approaches. One is unstructured networks, for example, gossip, or structured networks like DHTs. So the issue with things like DHTs or distributed ledgers in blockchains is that they depend on a global state that everyone has to synchronize and know in order to participate in the network and operate in this network. And another issue with peer-to-peer systems is that if you consider each device on the network equal, that's quite unrealistic if, because we have high-capacity servers and mobile user devices which have quite unique needs. With mobile devices, if you would participate in a peer-to-peer network, you would quickly run out of battery due to the CPU and disk I/O, and that the whole device needs to be awake all the time. Another approach I would propose is a two-tier peer-to-peer architecture, where we have a core peer-to-peer network among servers. And we have edge networks on local networks of user devices. And users would connect to the core peer-to-peer network via a proxy, which participates in the peer-to-peer network. And if we combine this approach with this mergeable data stores that we replicate all the way to the user devices, this would lead to this would give autonomy and control and sovereignty over their data to the users, because then the users can have access to their data offline. And can move their data, since they can, they have a copy of their own data. They can select which network provider, which hosting provider they want to use. They can use even multiple ones at the same time for redundancy, or you can use different ones for different identities, etc. And this architecture also gives an encrypted inbox and storage to the users, where they can, via these proxies, they can subscribe to various groups in case of a public subscribe architecture, or have an encrypted storage and backup of their data. This leads to a resilient and autonomous infrastructure where the whole system keeps working even if you don't have an uplink, we don't have access to this proxy server somewhere on the internet, but we can still keep collaborating offline on the local network with other devices. And then once we have uplink again, we can synchronize with the rest of the world. Or another example is if a group starts collaboration offline, they go all home. And then they can keep continue collaborating on the data via these mergeable data structure stores. So this is the same architecture, but in more detail. So if he this describes the upper part describes the architecture of these proxy nodes, and the lower part is the user device. These proxy nodes participate in the core peer-to-peer network that you see in the upper part, and they all have a copy of these data stores that the users collaborate on. And it's important to note that these databases are just encrypted objects, object stores at this level of the architecture. So on the server, no administrator can see the contents of user data. And and then in the lower part of the this picture, you see the user devices that connect to this one proxy to fetch all the subscriptions, and they replicate all the databases that they operate with. At this level, since the user keeps all the encryption keys, the users can decrypt the data that's inside these databases. And once after a synchronization and when a new update arrives via PubSub, the user can merge the changes locally on their device. And at the bottom, you see the applications that connect to one of these data stores. And in this case, we can have completely self-contained and sandboxed local applications that have only access to this data store and nothing else, since all the information and data that they need is stored in this database. So these applications can read the data, display it to the user, and provide a user interface for interaction on this data. So this is in contrast with the currently prevalent centralized centralized databases, where servers provide access to these closed databases via a thin API and restrict access to the data through that, basically the data silos. And this allows open replicated databases and collaboration on these open databases, where everyone has full access and access to the data. And since these data stores are public key addressed, the creator of this database can also sign an access control list to restrict who can modify what part of the data structure that you would verify when local merging changes. You see that if the user that signed this change has access to that part of the data structure that they are trying to modify. The other important thing I like to point out that, what I mentioned already, that if we just focus on federation, that it doesn't give access to all the data of the users, and it's really hard to migrate anything. But if we add all these extra bits around these federated systems, that I would consider more like a kind of a hybrid between peer-to-peer and federated, but keeping the good bits of each, then that leads towards the data sovereignty aspects that I see desirable. And I'd like to talk about a little bit, just quickly mentioning the research that I've been doing around peer-to-peer publish-subscribe protocols. Podercast is one such protocol that is implemented as three layers of gossip protocols that relies on random peer sampling, a clustering protocol to find peers with overlapping subscriptions, and a dissemination protocol that once you found the group members you are collaborating with, you can disseminate the data to them directly. And this architecture allows relay-free routing, which means that only nodes interested in participating in a group forward messages for that group. So this means that it's not you do not forward data for random peers that you have nothing to do with, but only to only data that you care about. And then, I mean, this podcast, there's a paper published about this 10 years ago or so, but this, it still doesn't address many issues that we need to think about when designing peer-to-peer systems, such as privacy and security. And in case of random peer sampling, we have the issue that if you don't have that these protocols are oftentimes quite easy to subvert. If you do not adhere to the protocol, you can just lie about what other peers you know and skew the randomness. So there's an additional uniform random peer sampling approach that works by doing statistical analysis on the incoming peer IDs and trying to filter that and make sure that the sample that you have is indeed random. But this whole field still needs some more research. And then another issue with peer-to-peer protocols is that if you depend on user profiles, I'm going to finish in a second. Then you wouldn't want to like broadcast private user profiles to the whole internet. So you would need something like a Bloom filter-based private set intersection to determine common group membership. And the last thing is I'm working on is peer-to-peer search and discovery that gives you personalized interest-based collaborative filtering, tagging, news dissemination search protocols that work between these between the peer-to-peer nodes. But I'll talk about that another time. So, and you can see some references I mentioned. Any questions?
We currently do not have time for any questions. I'm sorry.
Okay. Then
thank you for the talk. Yeah. I think
if you want to talk about this, I will be at OffDem later, or you can reach me through p2pcollab.net.